Welcome to another episode of the Left Curve podcast. The Left Curve is basically an attempt from Mirablock to make crypto and Web3 knowledge possessed by industry experts and thought leaders accessible to the masses in simple terms, minus the jargon. Now, we've got our dear friend DMH joining us here, and you know DMH in the crypto world, it's easy to get lost in confusing information. We wanted to create something that would have helped us when we first started out. Now, you have been pretty active in the influencer vigilante builder space. It's like a curious combination of the three. Most notably, you've called out V33 DEXs in the past and other kind of dangerous protocol mechanics that has like a lot of Ponzinomics built into it. And that's when we thought, you know, we should invite you here, since a lot of the new entrants to Web3 either fall prey to predatory mechanics or don't know how to build like an audience. There's a lot of things you can actually guide our audience on. And, you know, other narratives out there are relatively safe and more long-term. They may not be so lucrative, but they are more safe and something that the audience should definitely look at. So I thought that, you know, you would be the right person to kind of guide our audience on those points as well. So today we're going to be primarily speaking about spotting trending narratives. Now, before we start, of course, let me preface that none of what we say is financial advice. We're just crypto enthusiasts. Please do your own research before making any investments. And with that being said, DMH, my old friend, please introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me here. And like, I feel that you have too many expectations from me. I'm not that experienced and that smart to tell all much about all the things, but I'll try my best. I am DefiMate here, or DMH, from Twitter. You might have seen me before. If not, please take a look.
Yeah, for sure. Let me add humble to that list as well of qualifications that you have. But yeah, definitely go check out DefiMate here after this podcast as well. My name is Don, and I'm one of the co-founders at Cradleblock. We're a Web3 native growth agency. And we're always looking for the next big thing, the next big hack, or how to improve current strategies that we're using to grow protocols. Now, DMH here has been someone that we have interacted with in the past. We've always found him to be very, very astute, very, very person of high integrity, I'd say. So that is the reason we decided to bring him onto the podcast as well. So I think let's just dive right into it, DMH. The first question I had is that when you were first starting out, what was the landscape of Twitter-based influencers across crypto? And I'm using the word influencers because I understand you don't like the term KOLs at all. So what were the missing pieces that you saw at that time that like motivated you to write a little bit as well? What was your first experience like?
So actually, like, KOL and influencer is almost the same thing. I just don't like being called like that, because I never had a goal to become an influencer or KOL. About the landscape, when I started, and the reason why I started, like, I was discovering crypto and DeFi myself, and that was around November 2021. So it was the high, market was at all-time highs, and I was reading what people were writing, and they were speaking about different DeFi strategies, but most of the strategies were quite unsustainable. People were speaking about, you know, locking CRE, getting yield. People were speaking about Olympus. People were speaking about Tom and Tom forks and stuff like that, which never made sense to me. I was thinking, okay, but like, I mean, I don't want to use. There are a lot of good opportunities, like with stable coins and other things. Even actually, after some time, I realized that even those strategies with stable coins were like super risky. But yeah, so at that moment, I realized, okay, I can write more about stable coins. And the thing is that I never had an experience of writing. I never had social media. I never wrote anything. But I decided to try. And people liked it. People started following me. And I became, people started following me more when I first spoke about Luna USD. They told that it's like not, cannot work like that, and it will collapse. And 1 month after it collapsed, 1 month after I wrote that, it collapsed. So yeah, people started following me more.
that the lunar demise became your weapon in some sense that there. But I'm really curious because I remember that, you know, Jordi having like a debate online with ASFI and others about why Olympus-Dow's game theory will not work out. You know, those days are really, really vivid in my memory as well because of the entire landscape, I would say. It was euphoric. I also remember, you know, the Algard bet and then GCR bet of Luna collapsing as well. Out of all of this, it seems like, you know, all of those people, such as Jordi or whether it's like Algard, all of them have like quite a lot of stripes, quite a lot of credentials in the sense that, okay, they've been trading for such a long while. You were saying you entered the market at that point of time. So how were you able to spot that, okay, this is unsustainable and then also resist the pull of investing into them, for example? Because, you know, a lot of people would say that, okay, IO2 entered in the same time, but I fell for this. Well, how did DMH not fall for this? Do you have like, you may not have like qualifications as per what you say in writing, but did you have like any qualifications for like economics or something?
No, no qualifications in economics. Just, I mean, like, I like finance, but I don't have qualifications in that. But it's like, you know, common sense and common, common knowledge in math. But these things, like, I mean, basically, if you remember, for example, UST Luna, there was this, like, reserve. Was it Anchor Reserve or something, which was just filled up by foundation. They were just standing that UST, which was like they were minting this UST, and they were sending this UST to Anchor Reserve, and Anchor was paying 20% on stable coins, and then people were looping. So I mean, this money were just like literally were just printed, and when people were pointing out on that, it's like, you know, Luna Maxis, they were saying, okay, but dollar is also printed out of thin air, so it's normal. I mean, yeah, it's normal, but I mean, nobody cares about UCI. It's not a currency, it's nothing, just a printed token. So, but people were believing that it is like equal to $1, which we know it's not equal. It's equal to 1 cent now, probably, or probably less. Yeah, so just analyzing like how things work, why they work, why they don't work, who is paying, like if you are getting paid, yeah, someone else is paying you. So you ask yourself who is paying you and what is the reason why he is paying you and like what he is getting in term. And with UST, it was just printed coins. So didn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of in line with the age-old saying of, well, if you don't know where the yield is coming from, you are the yield. And it's pretty weird to think that in the past when that was happening, there were people who were questioning it, but they were all getting shut down by, you know, diehard supporters of projects. Like, if you remember, you know, selling tokens at a profit was considered really bad, and there was a lot of sell shaming going on, and there was the whole pack of diamond handling people who would really berate you if you decided that you do not want to associate yourself with the project anymore. So I do remember those times. Those were interesting ones, and you know, a lot of narratives have, like, you know, propped it up since then. And you know, because of your insights, or as you say, common sense, can you tell us like a little bit about the narratives or the topics that you personally believe you were a little bit early to as compared to like the rest of the market?
I just, one moment there, I also recalled one more thing, which was Wonderland, which was also like Olympus fork again, as far as I remember. And I remember they had a very strong community, so all this cute Sark and Wagmi and stuff, and people were really, really holding all those tokens, and like, they never wanted to sell on this key, okay, like Wagmi, like, we will make it. And then everyone got liquidated and planned to zero. That was also like funny to observe. And can you please repeat your question if you don't mind?
Yeah, for sure. So if you remember, you know, those were the days of narratives, but since then a lot of narratives have actually popped up if you think about it. Like we had the real yield, we had the full China is betting on Bitcoin narrative. So which ones do you think you have been early to as compared to like the rest of the crowd? Which ones did you spot a little bit earlier than others?
I don't think I've been early to something, and I think all these narratives crap. And I think most of the narratives are like, made up by like this crypto cabal, crypto Twitter cabal, because sometimes people just come up with some strange naming of some events that they expect will come up. I don't actually take it serious. Don't pay attention for that. I really don't know any narrative which really worked out and stayed with us. Like, I mean, it's all made up.
Very interesting. And it's very interesting that you mentioned crypto cabal in there. So I'll just like spend like few extra minutes in there. For those people who are just like new to Web3, can you explain crypto cabal? And because you keep exposing them anyway on your Twitter. So do you want to like spend like, a couple of moments to just talk about, what is something that crypto cabal is composed of? What do they do? And what is something that the audience needs to be wary of as well?
I mean, it's half mem, half not. I don't know them myself. Okay? I don't know who is there and so on. But sometimes you can see that some crazy, crazy narratives come up. I mean, like, if you remember, there were some projects like, you remember ERC-404, for example? If you remember, it came up out of nowhere. It pumped, like, took some crazy numbers. And people, like, everyone was saying, okay, this is like, next big thing, and they were explaining there were a lot of like a list of things which ERC-404 will improve and how everything will start working great in the space and so on. And then in one moment, like, it's like it just evaporated. Yeah, no, it's like nobody even can recall like what was that and why were people speaking about that. Yeah, and then like it disappeared. And you had this narrative, like every few months you have one more like thing like that. And everyone's talking about that. Everyone is, buying into this, and then like it disappears. So I think this is like very, very some sort of insider things. And you can see that a lot of like big OG accounts are quite often involved with it. They are the one like who starts speaking about this first. And I mean, always the same.
Yep. And it's very interesting that this is something that the new entrants to Web3 need to be very aware of. You do not know how big the organization or how big the group of influencers can be on Twitter that are talking about a particular token, but it's all organized and they're doing it simply to dump on you, like for the lack of a better phrase. And that is what their goal is. But you mentioned that, how the ERC-404 came up, went away. It had no reason to come up and stayed for a while, made the top dogs a bit of money and then, vanished as well. So there's a lot of noise on CEP, right, when it comes to latest trends. Now, how do you decide which one is going to stay versus which one is just going to be like a fad?
First of all, if I can be wrong. Sometimes, I mean, maybe most of the times I can be wrong, but when I decide, when I'm looking at this, I'm trying to understand like how much sense is this, how is it sustainable, can it sustain over time, and so on. Like, for example, I'm big fan of Pendle. Yeah, I've been always a big fan of Pendle. I like what they were doing, but early this year, they introduced this like this markets for points, and say people were buying YT and they were getting points exposure, and they had a very big growth. So they went to 5 billion TPL or 6 billion TPL. It was extreme success for them. But it's the very same moment, I realized that it cannot work there. Points is fun, but points will not stay forever. Points is not cash. And also I saw, there is no mistake in what Pendle was doing. Pendle did an amazing job. But I saw what other projects, this projects were doing, like, you know, those LRT projects and all other projects that were launching coins, they started farming the users massively. There are projects that are farming users with the coins for 1 year already. Yeah, at that moment, like, it was clear to me that this point is, like, very, very bad for users. And people who are, like, buying into this YTs or depositing to Pendle, they will have, like, some losses. And at that moment, you know, I knew that Pendle will not be able to sustain the goal. So they went from 6 billion to 2 billion TVL now. And most of the TVL is still... is still there because of the points, but the points will end one day or another. So that narrative for me, I knew that it will not be sustainable. Despite, again, Pendle did nothing wrong. Pendle is doing a great job, but it was not sustainable growth. And there are different examples like that from other protocols. They have very good growth, but they know that, in my opinion, that this growth cannot sustain and they will fall earlier or later. I'm not saying that Pendle will fall. I'm just saying that they will not be able to sustain that TVL they had because of the points. Points meta is already dying, and it will be only worse.
Very interesting, specifically because you also mentioned Pendle, and you know, the whole PT and YT saga has been pretty interesting for us to observe as well, especially after they got integrated with a lot of LRTs. You know, back in the day, of course, you know, I believe it was you and Lin who have always been like champions of Pendle in some sense. And then after that, when they started integrating with LRTs, I think they did experience a significant growth spurt altogether. You know, slowly I saw that everybody wanted to integrate with them. But, you know, just the other day, I was actually watching a video which was talking about, you know, how Pendle plans to slow down its TVL drop. And, you know, that's when I realized that, okay, this TVL drop is, you know, kind of hurting the protocol quite significantly in some sense. It's very interesting. It looks like you're saying that, you know, you can support projects that have been building for a while. You can support those narratives. But the moment they make a mistake, you should be smart enough to pinpoint that and to say, okay, I think this is the wrong move by an otherwise very good team. And that is how you can kind of safeguard yourself against these happenings as well. And how do you look at, you know, approaching projects that may not have Pendle's track history? Let's just say it's a new project. Let's just say tomorrow you launch DMH DAO. I'm just giving you an example, right? Now, if you were someone else, how would you approach assessing DMH DAO? You know, given that it's a new project, would you be investigating like the founding team, in this case DMH? Would you be you know, investigating the kind of projects DMH is associated with? How would that work out?
Yeah, just one thing I wanted to add, that I don't think that Pendle did something wrong. I just realized that it will not be sustainable long-term what they did. But the decision, like, the smoke was very dry from their side. Yeah, they grew, like, I don't know, what was it, 60x or something. And they still 10x, they still have 10x higher TVL than what they had before. The point. So from their perspective, they did everything right. I just didn't think that it will be, you know, sustainable. Answering your question about assessing, I mean, I know everyone has like own beliefs and own bias, and I have faded a lot of things which went well, and you have your own thesis and you follow your thesis, and if the project let's say fits in your thesis and you see the clear path how they can grow and what will be the reason for their growth, then yeah, then like it's a good project, and then like you have to decide.
Very interesting. Okay, so the way it is through like thesis building, checking up on the team, and like then checking out the project itself. Speaking of projects, you know, I know that you have been working on one of your very own. So can you tell us a little bit more about it? Can you tell us what it does? And if you think, you know, your influence or if you think your background is assisting in its growth as well.
Are we talking about fluid, right? Okay.
That tells me there are more.
So with fluid. I joined ISNAP team last year. It was actually this year full time. And we have four different products, but the project with the most potential is fluid. We inside the team, we believe this will be the biggest project in whole DeFi within several years. From the product perspective, from what we already achieved and what we are building and what we are releasing in a few weeks, I know that there is no competition yet. Even now, among lending markets, fluid has no competition. If you compare like LTVs, if you compare liquidation penalties, we have by far the best parameters, up to 100x difference. And we are launching soon the DEX, which will be also the most efficient DEX in the space. So, as I'm saying, like product tech wise, we are very, very confident in our product, but growing it is much more difficult than we expected. Mostly because people still hesitate to interact with new projects, and we are relatively new. People want, people would rather have worse conditions. They will have lower LTVs, for example, and they will use Aave because they know like Aave is safe for Aave has 7 year track record, rather than like moving to fluid, which will give them better conditions. But we don't have that track record, and I can understand it. I totally understand it. For now, people see fluid as like, okay, that's a more efficient protocol, a more efficient version of Aave. Yeah, we have a few percent better here, a few percent better there. Like it's all great, but why would they use it? Why would they move from Aave, which I know is safe? But with the launch of Fluid DEX, we will change the way people are using DeFi, I believe so, because we bring novel concepts that allow to use debt as a trading liquidity, and people are also earning on their debt. So when you're borrowing on Fluid, you can get paid to borrow because you will be getting trading fees on your debt. And when trading fees are higher than your borrowing cost, then you're literally getting paid to borrow. I think that this will give us a very, very big boost. It will help us, you know, to grow, because we kind of reached a point where we cannot grow. We don't grow. Yeah, we reached 800 million market size in the first 90 days. And then in the next 19 days, we didn't grow in dollar terms. Yeah, we Ethereum went down like 50%, and we actually doubled our TVL in ETH terms. But in dollar terms, we are still around like 750, 800 million market size. So we're at this point where we like hard to grow, but we are launching Fluid DEX finally, like in 2 weeks. And we hope it will give us very, very big boost. Answering your question about like does it help me? Does it help us to grow fluid because like I have audience? It definitely helps because it's all about distribution, and I use my account like as another distribution channel for fluid. Like I speak a lot about fluid. I share a lot of all like technical overviews and deep dives into small things and explaining why it matters, what we do different, and why is it possible to, you know, is it possible for us to achieve this high efficiency, and how we will be changing the space. And yeah, and people read it, and I think it helps with growing. But as I told, like, we reached like that point, I mean, it's hard to grow for us at the moment, but it will change. Like, in 2 weeks, we will all sure that it will change a lot. And actually, you know, we speak with different liquidity providers and protocols. We explain them about fluid bags, and we don't offer any incentive from our side, but there are already like 9-figure pre-commitments of DEX liquidity from others. So yeah, once we launch, a lot of people will see that, you know, like, it's within the first week we have like another few hundred million of DEX liquidity. And I think within the first month alone, Fluid DEX will become the most liquid DEX for certain pairs on Ethereum, especially like for USDC, USDT. We will be the most liquid DEX. And for, you know, for some LSTs, MLTs, we can also become the most liquid and one of the most liquid DEXs. That will be a big success for us.
And walk me through the strategy you're utilizing at Fluid for growing. Like, are you? So I like to see it as like two camps. One is core builder, build and they will come camp. The other one is, okay, we are building, but we also need to hit the right narratives. Which side would you and the Fluid team be leading towards right now? And if it's the narrative side, can you tell us like what narratives are you guys looking to associate Fluid with?
No, there are no particular narratives. So on the growing, I'd say lending markets, they are mostly for whales, yeah. So we need to get this with us. We need to show them, okay, you get the better conditions and it is safe, because yeah, whales, they don't want to risk the capital. So we want to assure everyone the protocol is very safe for them. It has the best conditions, and they have to move. And yeah, there are no particular narratives that we are following or, you know, trying to get integrated to. At some point, like, LRT helped us, because we had a game with like very good conditions for leveraging LRTs. It was very safe. People never got hurt with us, so they never got liquidated for no reason. They had high points from this LRT projects and Fluid, so it helped us a lot. But it's never like the main reason why people using Fluid. It's just, you know, it was a good way to, yeah, to attract some more people using Fluid. But yeah, but there is no particular narrative where we are trying to fit in. After we launch the DEX, I think people probably will see the narrative that there is a new way to provide liquidity. You don't need to lock your capital. Basically, if you're borrowing, you become a liquidity provider, and there should be like no idle capital sitting on the DEXs. If you see some DEXs, they have like billions in TVL, but like zero trading volume. So this is just idle TVL sitting there in case, you know, people want to trade. On Fluid, yeah, we will liberate the TVL. We will liberate the tokens that are just sitting on the DEXs. And all what we need is like people will start borrowing on Fluid.
Understandable. And you have basically said that, you know, LRT has definitely helped you guys at like one point as well. That of course caught my attention, because, you know, LRT seem to be all the rage now. I mean, the mindshare definitely may have gone down, but you know, you've had like an interesting journey, you know, entering as like a casual observer and then noticing the, you know, obvious Ponzi, started writing about it, became a contributor long term to multiple different protocols, decided to focus on Fluid first. Now, if somebody Now that's your story, right? That's how you entered in 2021. If somebody's entering in 2024 and they wish to be at your position where, you know, they don't want to only become somebody who writes, they don't want to only become somebody who's building without any kind of distribution. They want to pair the two, the distribution with like a product building. How do you suggest they should approach it? Like what would their first steps supposed to look like? Should they focus on simply educating themselves? Should they focus on documenting their journey? Should they focus on building the product and like documenting the product building journey? What, in your opinion, if you could, you know, go back in time or start again to today, how would you do it now?
First of all, someone wants to start, they should start writing on Twitter. That's probably the best decision in my life so far, except marrying my wife. you should start writing, and if nothing happens, if you don't succeed, okay, you don't lose anything except the time you spend for it. But the upside is unlimited. Like everyone I know in the space, everything I achieved in the space is only because I started writing on Twitter and got to know people. People got to know me. So yeah, definitely I recommend everyone to start writing, and you have to be interesting. So you have to write something that other people will want to read. It's all about like this attention economy. Yeah, you don't have to become, let's say, Ansem and speak about all these meme coins and do the things you don't want. Yeah, you will not achieve his follower count and his level of being famous. But you have to write something you're interested in yourself and what other people will find interesting to read. If you are building a product, speak about the product, speak why you think it's important. But also, like, if you are focusing on your product, people will likely read you less. So you have to speak about different things. I speak a lot about Fluid now on my Twitter. Like, mostly I speak about Fluid, and I know that people started reading me less. Like, I feel so. But this is what I'm interested in now. I'm not interested in other projects. I don't find like 99.9% of protocols, I don't find them interesting at all. So I don't want to speak about them. While Fluid, I think, is like the greatest thing in DeFi since inception. So yeah, I mean, like, do what you want, write what you like, and people might start reading you and might start following you, and it will help you long term. Yes, start writing. That's for sure the best advice.
I will take that advice myself too, because I've been told that I need to write more on Twitter myself. I think the fear is that, you know, we keep a lot of our thoughts internal, whereas on Twitter, somehow you need to really start putting your thoughts out there in order for like the public to test them out before they decide whether it's like a good idea or like a bad idea. I think we just self-censor quite a lot in the beginning.
Sometimes I wanted to write about something. Like, I had a thought, let's say. I was thinking about something and like, okay, I didn't do anything. And then I see someone wrote a tweet about the same thing, and like, it's really a lot of traction. Then I'm like, why didn't I write what I was thinking about? Like, everyone cares about it. If you're thinking about something, always write about it. People like reading someone's thoughts. People want to engage in one way or another. So yeah, it's better to write.
Yep. And speaking of writing, of course, we had like quite a journey in this conversation. We went from starting to write, then becoming associated with different protocols as well. In terms of narratives, if I kind of like bring the point back home to say, what is the one narrative that you as DMH are eyeing right now? Or would you say that, you know, you're too focused on Fluid, you're not exactly keeping track of narratives altogether?
I don't know what narratives are there right now, to be honest. I mean, the narrative is now is to survive and not to buy higher DV coins. These are the two narratives. But I don't know, like, can you give me an example? What is in, like, do you know what is in there?
For example, LRDs were all the hype. AI in crypto was all the hype. So anything that you feel like, okay, this is a long-lasting opportunity. Are you seeing like any sort of long-lasting opportunity to build something? You know, you can also phrase it as, if you were not building Fluid, what would you be building instead? Or what in what sector would you be building instead?
Okay. Now, let's see. AI has definitely a very big... it's a very big opportunity. I'm not really like very well aware about AI in crypto. I don't know if it's all scam or not. I need to check. But overall, AI has big future. It's I cannot tell anything about crypto AI. LRTs. So with LRTs, because you know, again, like I'm more on the building side, and always knew that LRTs, like for the one last year, I mean, there was no reason to hold, let's say, any LST instead of just stake it, except you were getting tokens from this LRT projects and from Alien. Yeah. So, LRTs might be... It's hard to say. I mean, like, there is not much demand for restaking. I mean, like, nobody is buying that data and so on, the data availability. So long term, probably LRTs will make sense, but just same as LSTs make sense. Yeah, you get some extra yield. But there is nothing like super groundbreaking that, you know, that will forever change the space. I do not feel that way. And LRTs for the past 1 year, it was very profitable, a farming opportunity. Now it's less profitable, but yeah, it's more about farming. So I'm not exactly sure what are the narratives right now. There are like tens of layer twos and everyone's farming this layer two, but there is no narratives except farming the airdrops. For me, the narrative is Fluid only. Don't know what else is there.
Yep, I do think that the meta is kind of slow. It's been AI and deepened for a while, and just stays there. We're still waiting for like a sector rotation. We did see, of course, like, you know, Taiki and a couple of others talk about Aave, and then, you know, suddenly Aave's token price decides to do well. Everybody starts talking about Aave again. So it's like DeFi summer. Like we do go back to those protocols every once in a while, but not in like a very strong sense. I do think that this cycle has lacked a lot of new fundamentals in some sense. I mean, Eigenlayer did something by like, you know, introducing a new concept altogether, but it still feels like rushed. It still feels like unfinished in some sense, right? Like how many protocols are actually going to leverage ABSs, which in turn is going to generate the revenue that is supposed to feed the yield. And that is a big black box question. That's a big elephant in the room question.
That's right. But I always say that Athena is like a very good example, because Athena came with a new product and they immediately find like PMA. And see, has they will stay in the space for sure, because they tokenize Basel Street and they say, okay, now everyone can get access to it. I think it's a good example. And I like what they eat. I cannot say that I'm using Marsh myself, but I mean, they brought a new product which has use case. I think it's one of the best examples in the past year.
Got it. Very, very interesting. And, you know, I can chat with you for hours, DMH, but unfortunately, by the constraints of time, I have to ask you, like, the last question that you ask to everyone: if there was one Web3 chat you would want us to invite to the podcast, who would it be?
That would be DeFi, Ignaz. Ignaz DeFi, and that's show.
Yeah, of course I know. Funny enough, somebody else has also recommended him to us on this very episode. I'll have to like go back and check. Maybe it was Hitesh, maybe someone else. But yeah, we've gotten that request before. And yeah, definitely we'll try reaching out to him, getting him on the show, see if something works.
We should try. He's good. If not Ignaz, then you can try with Tor.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Time for some on-chain time. But yeah, man, thank you so much for being available, having this chat with us today. And by the way, to our audience, if you love the show, please do give us a follow on @RadarBlog. My account personally as @0x0. Make sure you follow our guest, DeFi Made here @DeFi_Made_here. He's pretty active on Twitter. It's definitely worth reading. And before we go, DMH, my last question to you, who's in your profile picture on Twitter? That's been a question that I've personally had for a while.
So this guy is called, his name is Richard Wyckoff. He's like a stock trader, and he has some theories about trading. So there are like this Wyckoff schemes of accumulation, distribution, and stuff like that. So yeah, he used to be a stock trader.
Very interesting. Thank you so much for clarifying one of my really longly held queries, I'd say. But it was a pleasure having you, DMH. Thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to meet you and to speak.